Okay. The Sedra starts out with the Tahara of a Metzora. How, after his Tzoras is cured, how does he become Tahar and be able to resume a regular living pattern? So one of the things that is central to his Tahara is that he has to bring two birds. One, Yeshecht, and to mix the blood with Mayim Chaim, with spring water. And the other one, you let go free. You set that bird free to fly. I think the Chofetz Chaim says this idea. If he doesn't, at least he represents the idea. And that's the following. One would think that since there's such a serious prohibition to speak Lashon Hara, and has such serious implications and repercussions, that a person should try not to speak. The less you speak, the better it is. That's not the case. There are plenty of things in this world to speak about. And that are important to speak Divrei Torah, to speak, communicate with people properly. So the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want you not to speak. He wants you to speak, but he wants you to speak the right things. The Chofetz Chaim was very, very careful with Lashon Hara, but look how much the Chofetz Chaim spoke. And he wrote. Spoke constantly. So therefore we take two birds. One, birds represent talking. They chatter. So one bird, we shecht. And we say that that kind of chatter better to put out of this world. And you take the blood of that bird and we mix it with Mayim Chaim, which represents Torah. If you want to atone for speaking the wrong things, speak the right things connected to Torah. It says if a Talmud Chacham was nichsho in Lashon Hara, he should learn more Torah. He should speak good things in place of the bad things that he spoke. But the other bird represents the fact that speech is a very good thing. Let it go free. But speak the right things. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want you not to talk. He wants you to talk, but he wants you to talk properly. So there's a bird that we let free and continue talking, and the other bird that we shecht. Also, part of the Tahara process is we take from that blood and we put it on the Metzora's earlobe, on his hand, on his thumb, and on his big toe. So why? I was thinking maybe the following idea. The Gemara says that there are two, Gemara in one place says, why are people's fingers tapered? Why are they thinner on the end than at their base? So the Gemara says they're tapered so they can fit into your ear. So if you hear Lashon Hara, you can put your fingers in your ears. Okay, that's one Gemara. There's another Gemara. The Gemara says, why are the earlobes, what's it called, pliable? So in case you'll hear Lashon Hara, you can bend your earlobe into your ear and you have ready-made earplugs. So it always bothered me, two things. First of all, if you hear Lashon Hara, you don't have to put your fingers in your ear and stand there like an idiot with your fingers in your ear. Or bend your earlobes in. There's an easier way. Use your feet. Walk away. First question. Second question. Why do you need earlobes and fingers? Without fingers, the earlobes are useless. You have to use your fingers So if you're using your fingers already, put your fingers in your ear. So why do you need both earlobes and fingers? And they're both connected, so you're not going to lose your fingers or lose your earlobes. So if you have fingers already, put them in your ear. Why do you need the earlobes for? Why does the Gemara say two different things, earlobes and fingers? So I was thinking the following. There are three kinds of Lashon Hara, and you need to react to them in three different ways. The worst kind of Lashon Hara is a somebody who does it almost as a professional. He's called a Baal Lashon Hara. He enjoys doing it. He does it maliciously. He harms people. That kind of person is an evil person. That kind of person, stay away from. If you hear that person speaking Lashon Hara, walk away. You shouldn't be around a person like that. He is an evil, malicious person. Most people are not like that. Most people who speak Lashon Hara are not evil and malicious. They're just people that make mistakes sometimes and speak Lashon Hara. Therefore, if you walk away from a regular person who's speaking Lashon Hara, you're going to give them the impression that they're evil, malicious, and you can't be around them, which is not true. So there, you take your fingers and you put them in your ears. This is figuratively, I'm not talking actually. But the reaction is like putting your fingers in your ears, meaning I'm not going away from you. I'm standing here. You're a nice person, right? I would like to have a connection with you. I don't have to walk away from you. But right now you're doing something I can't have a connection to, so I'm putting my fingers in my ears. When you finish your Lashon Hara, tell me, I'll take my fingers out of the ears, I'm still here with you. You're not a bad person, but you're doing something bad. And I want you to know that, I'm putting my fingers in my ears. There's a third kind of Lashon Hara. That kind of Lashon Hara is very selective, meaning the following. I have a daughter that's in Shidduchim, and somebody suggested a certain young man for her. And I don't know anything about this guy. I want to look into him, see who he is, see if he's fitting for my daughter. And I'm walking with a friend of mine, Reuven, and I see Shimon coming in the distance, and I say, oh, Shimon knows this guy. So I got to ask him about this person. So Reuven is standing there, and I say to Shimon, do you know anything about so-and-so? Shimon knows that this person is a serial killer. He's murdered 7 wives already. It's very important for him to tell me that, so my daughter does not marry him and become number 8. Okay? On the other hand, Reuven doesn't have to hear that information because he doesn't have any daughter, and it's not a toelis for him. So therefore, Shimon starts to say, oh, him? And Reuven gets the feeling that something bad is coming about this guy. If he puts his fingers in his ears, figuratively, he's going to give Shimon and me the feeling that something's wrong over here. They shouldn't say it. And that's wrong. He should say it. He should say it to me. But Reuven doesn't have to hear it. Therefore, Reuven doesn't put his fingers in his ears. He takes his earlobe. What's the purpose of these, of the outer ear? The purpose of the outer ear, the Gemara says, is to be a mefarcheses. And our mefarcheses is a funnel. It directs the sound to you. If you wouldn't have an outer ear, the sound would just go right by you. This collects the sound waves and directs it towards you. So therefore, Reuven figuratively says the following. I'm not going to walk away or put my fingers in my ears because I would give you the impression you're doing something wrong, that this is Lashon Hara. And maybe Shimon will clam up and he won't tell you what you have to hear for the sake of your daughter. Therefore, I'm going to take my earlobes and close them in to make the statement, this is not Lashon Hara for you or for him, but it's Lashon Hara for me. The problem here is not that it's Lashon Hara, the problem is it's not for me. I have to close up my ears, not Stam, to make the impression that it's Lashon Hara. So again, there's 3 ways of reacting, figuratively speaking. First way is, use your feet, walk away. That's for a person who's a Baal Lashon Hara. Second thing, put your fingers in your ears for a person who's basically good but doing something wrong. He's not a bad person, but he's doing something bad. And the third kind is where the Lashon Hara is not for the person speaking it and hearing it, but for you as a bystander that has no business hearing it. Therefore, when they are Mitzai or a Mitzora, where do they put the blood? On his earlobe for that kind of Lashon Hara, on his thumb for the Lashon Hara of fingers, and on his big toe for the Lashon Hara of using your feet to walk away. Okay. Next, the Torah speaks about nige batim. Okay, Torah says that if you'll have a nega in your house, so the first thing you should do is take everything out of the house before the Kohen comes and declares the house tamei. Because if the things are in the house and the house is declared tame, they become tame. If they're out of the house, when the house is declared tame, they're tar. So the Gemara says, what does it make a difference? Take it to a mikveh. But not every kli has a tahara b'mikvah. The kli kalim that you can't be matayar in a mikvah are kli cheres, are what's it called, are earthenware kalim. They, you have to break them. Earthenware kalim are usually very cheap kalim. They're not expensive. They're earthenware. So therefore we learn from here a special limud. HaTorah chosa al mamonam she Yisrael. How careful is God for Jewish money? The Rabban Shem was out of his way to tell you, get those kalim out of the house before the Kohen comes, that they shouldn't become tame, and you won't be able to do anything except break them. That only applies to very inexpensive kalim. And still God was concerned about your loss of money. HaTorah chosa al mamonam she Yisrael. We see how important money is. Which leads us to the following question. The Gemara says that the reason, another reason, why we make him take all his kalim out of the house. That's one Gemara. In another place, the Gemara says like this. Why do people get nigei batim? We know that people get negayim on their body for lashon hara. On their clothing, the Kli Yoker says, because they're bali gaiva. On the house, because they're tsarei ayin. They are cheap and stingy, selfish people. And they don't want to share their money with other people. And therefore, part of the kapara is, before the Kohen comes, the Torah says, get everything out of your house. Why? To embarrass you. Because a person who's stingy, when people come to borrow things from him, so he claims he doesn't have them. I don't have it. Right? Because he doesn't want to share anything with anybody else. So he claims he doesn't have it. Now his house has a nega, and he has to take everything out of his house. So he has everything on his lawn. His neighbors pass by. He say, hey, the lawnmower you said you didn't have. There's a lawnmower. Right? The tea set that you said I couldn't borrow. There it is. So it embarrasses him, right, that till now he's been lying that he has nothing, and now he has to put everything he has on the lawn, and everybody sees it. So it's a part of the kapara for tsaras ayin. Tsaras ayin means that he's too stingy with his money. Very contradictory things. If somebody's stingy with their money, that means they give too much importance to money. So why would we want that person to learn a lesson at the same time how much God is concerned about your money? Just the opposite. I want to teach you money's not important. Why are you so stingy? Money's not important. So at the same time that we're embarrassing him because you're stingy and making you put everything on the lawn so your neighbors see what you claim you didn't have and didn't want to and loan to them because you're stingy, at the same time the Torah says there's a purpose in that to tell me that God is concerned very much about the loss of Jewish money. Seems to be contradictory things. If you want to impress upon a person not to be stingy, tell them money's not important. Don't tell them money's important. Two things don't seem to go together. In addition, it says that many times when a person would have a neg on his house, and then it would be tame, you have to demolish the house. And when they demolish the house, they find a treasure. Because the emoroyim, the goyim, hid money in the hid their treasures in the walls of their house because they didn't want the Jews to get it. And now you'll have a nega, you'll have to demolish the house, you'll find the treasure. But we're punishing this person for being stingy. Now we're giving treasures? Is this a punishment or is this a prize? What's going on? There seems to be very contradictory messages over here. I want to say the following. I think we discussed this way back in Parshas Vayishlach, but it's a long time ago. It says, Sadikim chavivim aleihem mamonam yoser migufan. A tzaddik values his money more than his body. Tzaddik, we learn from Yaakov Avinu. He went back for some earthenware things, relatively inexpensive, and he put his life in danger with Esav in order to get them. So we see that a tzaddik values his money more than his body. That's a tzaddik. A tzaddik values his money more. So we explain that a tzaddik understands that his money is given to him by God to use somehow for Avodas Hashem. It's a kli for Avodas Hashem. You come into this world, it's like a play. Everybody has their part to play. So you're given a neshama, which is equipped to fulfill your part. When you get a part in the play, you also get a costume. So you get a body. That's your costume to wear in this world to do your part. You also get props to be able to do your part. So those are your material possessions. A tzaddik understands that just like his neshama is given him to serve God, so is his body and so is his money. And every single thing has a purpose, and it's a kli, it's a utensil to be used for avodas Hashem. And that's why the money is not intrinsically important. What makes it important is its function. What do you use it for? It's given to you to use for avodas Hashem. And that's why the place we learn it from is an earthenware. Earthenware is very special. An earthenware kli is mekabel tuma only if you touch it on the inside. But if you touch it on the outside, it doesn't become tummy. If the tuma comes in contact with it on the outside, it's not tummy. Only on the inside. Whereas other kalim are tummy whether you touch them on the outside or the inside. One way of understanding that is that tuma has to occur. Tuma can only devolve on something important. Something that's worthless doesn't get tuma. So something made of wood or something made of metal, there's two values to the kli. One is the material. Wood is worth something. Metal is worth something. So if I touch it on the inside, I'm touching the function of the kli. If I touch it on the outside, I'm touching the material. Each way, it's makabel tuma. Both of them have a value. But earthenware has no value as the material. It's worthless. What makes it valuable? Its function. So if you touch it on the inside, you're touching the function, it becomes tamei. Touch it on the outside, you're just touching the material, it doesn't become tamei. That's what a tzaddik considers his money. His money is a kli. It's not valuable intrinsically. It's valuable because of its use. It can be used for avodas Hashem. That gives it value, like earthenware. Therefore, the tzaddik views his body as a utensil to be used for avodas Hashem, to fulfill his part in this world, like a costume. And he views his money as the same thing. Which one's more precious? Not which one's more important. It says, chavivim aleihem, precious. What's more precious to a person? What you put more effort into. The more effort you put into something, the more precious it is to you. The less effort, the less precious. How much effort do you have to put into securing your body? None. It's given to you as a birthday present. First birthday, you got it as a present. Here's a body, use it. How much effort do you have to put into maintaining your body? A lot. You have to eat and make sure you stay healthy and so on. How much effort do you have to put into using your body? Also a lot. So out of three possible efforts, two apply to the body. You don't have to put effort into securing it, but you have to put effort into maintaining it and using it. How about money? So if people would steal, they wouldn't have to put too much effort into money, securing your money either. You could steal. But tzaddikim don't steal, the Gemara says. Therefore, they have to earn every penny honestly, which is difficult. To secure your money honestly is difficult. Needs effort. Then they have to maintain their money. Then they have to use it. Three of the three efforts. So which one? Both of them are kalim for avodas Hashem. Which one entails more effort? The money. Because the body, you didn't have to put any effort into securing. And therefore, which is more precious? The money is more precious than the body. Both of them are kalim, avodas Hashem, but the money entails more effort, therefore it's more precious. Okay, that's the case. We don't want to tell a person money's not important. That's not why you're stingy, because you make money too important. Just the opposite. You know why you're stingy? Because you don't understand the real value of money. You think money is just to use for your pleasure. That's not the only purpose of money. The purpose of money is to use it for avodas Hashem. It's very important. It's extremely important. But you are not understanding the real value of that money. And therefore, the lesson we tell the person is the following. You're stingy, you didn't want to share your money with other people and use it for good purposes. We want to embarrass you, put it out on the lawn. At the same time, we want to teach you, don't think that money is not important. That's the lesson. The lesson is that money is very important. God is concerned about your money. But not because he's concerned about how much pleasure you can have from it. He's concerned that you can use that for a kli, for avodas Hashem. So at the same time we're telling you, don't be stingy, We're not telling you money's not important. We're telling you you're stingy because you don't really realize how important money is. You think money is only important because it gives you pleasure. But money has a much greater importance. Proof to it, God's concerned about every penny of a Jew, because every penny can be used for eternal purposes. So the lesson we're giving this person is two-pronged. One is, don't only look at money as something to give you pleasure, and therefore be stingy and not give it to other people, and not loan it and share it with others. But at the same time, don't think money's not important at all. Money is very important. And if you'd realize how important, then you wouldn't be stingy with it. You're just the opposite. You'd use it properly. And therefore, if once you learn your lesson and you understand how important money is, now we want to give you the treasure. Until now, you weren't fit to have that treasure because you'd abuse it. You'd misuse it. You wouldn't use it properly. But now that you learned the lesson and you understand how important money is, and because it's very important, therefore you should use it properly and share it and make it available to other people so you have a mitzvah from it, right? Now we'll give you the treasure. Now the treasure you weren't fit to have before, now you're fit to have it. Now you understand how important money is. We want to give you some so you can use it properly. So all the things fit together. Okay. The end of the Sedra, any questions on any of this? No, we'll go to the end. The end of the Sedra speaks about the halachas of a nida and a zava, and even though it's a little delicate, but I think it's important. I don't know if you learn this, even when you'll be a kala, and you learn this, you're not going to learn it and understand what's from the Torah and what's rabbinic, and to a certain degree it's important to understand that, and you're not little girls, so I'm going to tell you what the Torah halachas are, what the difference between a nida and a zava, and memela, why, how we relate to that period of the month halachically is the way that we do. Okay, a woman who sees her period for the first time in her life, so she's tamei for 7 days. Doesn't make a difference if she sees blood for all 7 days or one day. She's tamei for 7 days. She's not allowed to live with her husband for those 7 days. The next night, the seventh day at night, meaning the night of the eighth day, she goes to the mikveh and she's tar. That's it. She doesn't have to make any check herself or anything. She can be bleeding for the entire 7 days. If she stops before the night of the eighth, she goes to the mikveh. She's tahar, she can live with her husband again, she's tahar legabi, going to the Beis HaMikdash and eating kachim, whatever it is. After that, her period, if she continues bleeding, she's what's it called, the nida, until she'll stop bleeding. But once she stops bleeding, she goes to the mikveh. However, if she continues bleeding, what's it called, so she's a nida for 7 days, and what's it called, and then there's 11 days between periods. This doesn't mean every woman is like this, but this is the way the Torah said. There, what's it called? For 7 days, she's a nida, and then the next 11 days, usually she doesn't see anything. If she'll see blood in those 11 days, if she'll see 3 days consecutively, one day after the other, 3 days consecutively, then she'll be a zava. A zava is completely different. If she becomes a zava, she sees blood on the 8th day, the 9th day, the 10th day, right? Then she becomes a zava. Then she can't become tahar until she'll have 7 clean days. She has to inspect herself, and 7 days in a row, she has to be totally clean, and then she can go to the mikveh the next night, the night after those 7 clean days. And until she'll become a, what's it called, tahar, she doesn't go back to becoming a nida. Then, if in the normal circumstances, she sees blood 7 days, she goes to the mikveh, the next 11 days she doesn't see anything, then on the 18th day from her original, she starts her process again. If she sees blood during that, she's a nida again 7 days and becomes tahar. And then she has 11 days where she could become a zava. Okay, but it's very confusing when these days start and when they end or whatever. And therefore, most women today, halachically from the Torah, are nidos. They're not a zava, and therefore all they have to have is 7 days. They can see blood all 7 days. The next night, go to the mikveh. The night after, the 7 days, and they're fine. But Lamaisa, we're afraid that maybe they're seeing blood in the 11 days, which is not part of their nida. And they didn't make the calculation. To keep this calculation up is extremely, almost impossible, to know exactly where you're holding in the 7 days or the 11 days between periods. So therefore, we consider the Benos Yisrael, it's not the Chachamim, the women themselves were mekabel on themselves, that even if they see one drop of blood, one day, which is impossible to be a Zava, because you have to see 3 days to be a Zava, they consider themselves a Zava, and therefore they can't become Tohar until they count 7 clean days. So no matter how many days they see, even one day, even one drop, they consider themselves a Zava already, and they can't become Tohar until they have 7 clean days. Added to that is, for other reasons, you can't start counting those 7 clean days until 5 days have gone by. So even if you don't see blood for 5 days, you see blood for 1 day, you have to wait till the 5th day to be able to start making the examinations, and then 7 clean days, and then after the 7 clean days you go to the mikveh. So really it's a process of a minimum of 12 days now that a woman is a nida, even if she'll see just one day or 1 second or whatever. She has to wait 5 days before she can start counting her 7 clean days. And that time she makes examinations. She makes an examination on the 5th day to make sure that she stopped bleeding. And then the next 7 days she makes examinations in the morning and the evening to make sure that she's not bleeding. And then the night after the 7th day, she goes to the mikveh. So it's a minimum of 12 days. But there's some times that Yotzei min haklal, it could be shortened to 11 days, but usually it's 11 or 12 days. But it's not because that's the halacha from the Torah of a nida. A nida can't be more than, if the woman doesn't bleed, more than 7 days. It can't be more than 7 days. But a zava, until she'll have 7 clean days, can't become tar. And every woman considers herself a zava, even if she just sees 1 day, which is impossible to be a zava. Still, because this calculation is very complicated, to keep a cheshbon your whole life, to know if you're holding within the 7 days of nida or the 11 days of zava, what are you? So this way we always consider a zava, and then there's no problem. So that is the halachas of nida and zava. It has no practical application for girls not married, because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash or Korbanos, and to the greatest extent, the only difference is, could you eat Kodshim? Could you go into the Beis HaMikdash, which is irrelevant today, right? Same thing irrelevant for a man. All the tumors that apply to men too are to agree irrelevant. The only difference is that it, aside from the halachas of tumah and tahara, there's also halachas of iser. The Torah prohibits living, having relations with a woman who's a nida. And therefore, as long as a woman has not yet gone to the mikveh, she's a nida. So she was a nida once in her life and never went to the mikveh, even if she's not having her period now, but she once had her period, never went to the mikveh, she's a nida the rest of her life. It's possible, therefore, for old women who are way past menopause to still be nidos, because they never went to the mikveh. In fact, in Miami, where I had people in my kehila who were basically frum, this was a phenomenon of maybe 2 generations ago, right? There were women in the 1930s or whatever in America where the mikvos were not very hygienic. So there were some women who were frum. They were Shomer Shabbos. They ate kosher. We basically considered them frum, but they didn't go to the mikveh because it was not in vogue. Certain mitzvahs need, you know, popularity. It wasn't a mitzvah that was popular. Just like last generation, it wasn't popular to cover your hair. So a lot of women who were Shomer Shabbos and kosher didn't cover their hair. Not because it was okay, and even generation before that in Lithuania, there were kosher women didn't cover their hair. Because covering your hair meant either wearing a hair covering all the time, or wearing a shetel that looked like a beehive, right, and people didn't want to do it. It made them feel degraded. So it was a mitzvah, didn't have mazel. But there was a generation of frum women that did not go to the mikveh. So I had some of those women who were now in their 50s, 60s, right? And on Shabbos Shuvah, I would say that women who have never gone to the mikveh in their life, but now way past menopause, but still living with their husbands, right? If they go to the mikveh once, they can now, your chayiv koreis, every time you live with your husband, right, and you haven't gone to the mikveh ever in your life. So you still remain a nida from the first time you were a nida. But if you go to the mikveh once with the proper preparation for the mikveh, right, then every time after that, you're never going to become a nida again, and you'll absolve yourself from any isser now from that point on. So it's kedai once to go to the mikveh. So I remember the mikveh ladies in Miami would come to me and say, what's going on in your kehillah? All of a sudden, I get this rash of 60 and 70 year old women coming to the mikveh, right? So, there is something to that. But that's really the only difference today, whether a woman's tameh or tahar is only, it's not legabe davening, not legabe anything, except for having relations with your husband. And the Rabbanan added many other things, any kind of physical contact or handing things or whatever, that when you become a kala, you'll learn on your own. It's not important now. Yeah.
What do you think about the women who are qualified to check the stains?
The if a woman learns these things and really knows them, there's no reason why. Right, let's put it this way. I would imagine if I was a woman, I would feel more comfortable going to a woman with these things than to a man. Right? Even though, in the praise of Jewish women, women go to men doctors too, which is a lot more embarrassing, right, than showing stains to a rabbi. And you get used to it, right? Many women still go to men doctors, right? Even gynecologists. So you get used to it as a doctor. So showing these stains to a rabbi, a generation ago, you know, it's my generation, people were much more embarrassed to ask these kind of shilas, or if they brought it, they were very reticent. This generation, I don't think they're embarrassed about anything. The shilas I get from newly married couples, I'm embarrassed. But they ask me questions like, you know, it's nothing to be embarrassed about or whatever. So I don't know if that applies today. I don't think anybody has any reason to be embarrassed today about anything. But it used to be that people were embarrassed at least a little bit. In any case, so a woman who knows the halachas, usually they direct you to ask in the end, the final psak is a rav. They don't have smicha, they can pask and shilas. But to a certain degree, the things that are simple, they can answer. There's no reason why a woman can't do that. There are women that are bodkos, that are nurses usually, that have certain halachic understanding, that they can make examinations on a woman to let her know if she's bleeding because of her period, she's bleeding because of a wound that she has, which is a very big difference. And they also have a certain expertise. Usually, in the end, if it's a real shaila, you have to paskin a shaila, you have to ask a rav, right? But they can take care of the more practical aspects, right? Especially when it comes to colors, right? Not every color of blood makes you a nida. Has to be red, right? Or reddish. And anything less than that, there's a lot of browns, there's all different kinds of colors. And that's something you have to learn from somebody, who learned from somebody or whatever, to distinguish between these colors. And a woman can learn that too. And therefore, if a woman feels more comfortable going to a woman, and she'll see these stains or whatever, and if she'll have a shaila, or it'll be a stain that there you have to paskin a shaila, not just know what the color is, right, because it's complicated, she'll ask a rav, there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Any other questions about this? At least what was important, you should understand that if somebody will come and tell you later on, well, from the Torah, that's not what you have to do, right? And therefore, sometimes there are couples that are not so frum. and the woman and the man say, well, I can hold myself back for seven days without living together, but 12 days? So they want to go to the mikveh right after their period, before they count 7 clean days. In other words, 7 days of their period. In other words, whatever. So if we're really from the Torah, that would be okay. But rabbinically, it's not okay. And Benos Yisrael have been mekabel on themselves. Again, it's something that the Jewish women accepted upon themselves to never do that. So to tell somebody that's okay to do that, you can't. But if somebody does that, right, a friend can say, you know, if you go to the mikveh after 7 days, at least you won't be chayiv kares from the Torah. You'll be transgressing a rabbinic law, but you're saving yourself from kares, so it's a good idea maybe to do that. So a rabbi can't tell somebody to do that because they're distorting the halacha. The mikveh lady can't say the rabbi said it's okay, but she can turn the other way and allow somebody to go to the mikveh, because in the end, the punishment for living with a woman who went to the mikveh after the 7 days but didn't have 7 clean days is only a rabbinic thing, because usually the woman's not a zava, she's only a possible zava, and usually she's not. So it's much better, right, to let her go after the 7 days. At least she's not going to be chayiv koresh, at least she's taking care of what the Torah law is. But that is not proper for anybody to say it's okay to do. But if somebody does it, or somebody wants to give them advice as a friend, there it could be better. But surely for somebody who's frum, there's no thing to do that. You're being over. It's like, you know, it's exactly like you don't eat meat cooked in milk, but you'll eat chicken cooked in milk, right? If you think of eating chicken cooked in milk, which is only the Rabbanon, then think about this too. Nobody frum is going to eat, you know, chicken cacciatore or whatever, chicken and milk. It's not done. It's awesome, right? And it also could be even worse, because it means that you don't care about the Rabbanon. It means you don't believe. So it could be even a worse Aveira. But for somebody who doesn't know, at least to save them from the car race, it's something. Yeah. Okay. Okay, if I have totally confused you, Mirtz Hashem, someday at the right time you'll be a kala, you'll go through this, and in a very detailed way what's you have to know, and then you'll know it, you won't be so confused. But at least you should know that there is a Torah law, there's what's extra rabbinic, what's nida, zava, it's not the same thing, and therefore you should know that that there are differences in the halacha of those 7 days and the 7 clean days or whatever. That's all. Okay, I wish you all a Chag Kosher v'Sameach, and Yitzhak Shem, we'll see you after Pesach.